This is Audible.
Denver Fury, an urban fantasy harem adventure, American Dragons, Book 1, written by Aaron Crash, narrated by James Patrick Cronin. Chapter 1. It was going to be one of those nights at the Coffee Clutch. You'd think midnight in a Denver coffee shop would be pretty chill, and it was, most of the time. But then things can get weird on the night before a guy's 20th birthday. Stephen Whip grabbed the mop out of the cleaning closet just as Bud came in and kicked the water bucket. "Oops," Bud sneered. "I just gave you more to mop up. Gotta earn that minimum wage, cool Whip." Stephen tried to ignore the guy. What was the point of getting in a fight and losing his job over some bully messing with him? The cleaning company job was the one job that Stephen actually liked. His other two jobs, shelving books at the Denver Metro University's library and working in the cafeteria, were stupidly boring. Besides, there was no Tessa Ross there to make them bearable. Bud swaggered back to the employee lockers to grab his jacket and backpack. He'd leave early and let Tessa close down the latte machines and other equipment. It was unfair to Tessa, but Stephen could relax once the jerk-off left. Stephen maneuvered the rolling bucket and mop out of the cleaning closet and into the main area of the coffee shop. Chairs crowned the tables, and while the bright overhead lights had been turned off, the neon signs cast a multicolored light, like a buzzing rainbow. Tessa cleaned behind the bar, wiping off the machines with a rag and listening to music on her phone through one earbud. The other dangled free. Even late on a Wednesday night, traffic still moved down Broadway in a parade of lights. Before Stephen started mopping, he inhaled and smelled the sweetly bitter coffee and Tessa's perfume. He so wanted to tell her how he felt about her, but she was light years out of his league. She was a hipster chick, tattoos, piercings, and one side of her dark hair shaved. She dressed in black and wasn't afraid of showing a vast valley of pale cleavage. She was a thicker girl, but Stephen didn't mind a bit. He liked women with hips. While Tessa was ultra-cool and listened to music he'd never heard of, Stephen was just an everyday, average, normal guy. Medium height, medium weight, medium everything. He did like his hair, though, which was thick and inky. That was all he had going for him. He was too busy dealing with three jobs and working his way to a bachelor's degree to be cool. He'd never be able to afford even a single tattoo. He wasn't exactly shy, but he wasn't all that outgoing either. He splashed the mop down and started in the far corner by the door. If he timed it right, he'd get to the coffee bar right when Tessa finished. On good nights, she'd stay and they'd talk. On bad nights, she'd leave to hook up with someone, guy or girl. Tessa was pansexual and proud of it. On those nights, Stephen wanted to burn the entire city down out of mad jealousy. Bud walked out of the back room wearing what he called his extroverted bomber jacket and sunglasses, even though it was past midnight. He tossed Tessa a look and then did what he normally did. He pointed to a spot and said, "Hey, Cool Whip, you missed a spot." He laughed at his own joke. Instead of leaving, he paused. "What kind of a name is Whip, anyway?" Stephen felt Tessa watching them. He wanted to shove Bud, or come up with a snappy comeback, but his head was blank. Truthfully, he didn't much like his last name, either. "It's a name," Stephen said. "Just leave, Bud." The guy smirked. "That's the thing. You can't tell me what to do. You're just the cleaning guy. Tessa and I are baristas. We're important. You're not. We're the lords and you're the servant, Cool Whip." Stephen could picture himself slapping Bud across the face with the mop, but then Bud would contact the owners of the Coffee Clutch, and there went that job. He'd have to spend a fortune on coffee just to spend time with Tessa. He slapped the mop onto the floor. "Sure, Bud, I get it." Bully Bud laughed, unlocked the door, and went out into the night. Tessa returned to cleaning. Stephen made his way across the floor, hating himself for being such a punk. The fact was, he didn't feel like a servant. He didn't think he'd be smelling like disinfectant when he was in his 50s, unlike his mom, who worked as a cleaner at the Denver airport. He knew that at some point, things would change. But when? He had the floor shining when he reached Tessa, who sat on the counter, so he could get to the coffee stains and cast off grounds on the tile floor. He glanced up and saw she was watching him. "He's wrong," Stephen said suddenly. Well, that was certainly off script. He always let Tessa talk first. He didn't want to be the douche who talked her ears off.
"I know he is," Tessa said. "But come on, at some point you are going to have to stand up to him. He messes with you because he can get away with it."
Stephen leaned on his mop and dared to look into her face. She had a nose piercing and hazel eyes that changed color. Sometimes they were greener, and sometimes they were bluer, and sometimes they were even a brownish color. She obviously dyed her hair black, and he liked the combination. Always had. Dark hair with blue or green eyes was striking. There was a foreign exchange student at Metro University from India named Arya who had similar features. Stephen thought Arya might be a model because she was kill-me-slow gorgeous. She sometimes studied in the coffee shop. She loved the caramel lattes there. Yeah, the caramel lattes were good. Behind Tessa, the specials of the day, latte this, frap that, were written in her distinctive handwriting, full of loops and character. She'd also added little flourishes, cartoons of happy cups of coffee promising sweetness and caffeine. "Guys like Bud don't matter in the long run," Stephen said. "So what if he bullies me? I have a ton of stuff I want to do in this life, and I'm not going to let dicks like that get to me." Tessa grinned at him. It was warm and welcoming.
"What kind of stuff are you going to do?"
Stephen felt a blush warm his face. "I have no idea, but... can I be honest with you?" Tessa glanced at one of the many watches on her left wrist, along with a bunch of brass bangles and plastic bracelets.
"It's after midnight, early on a Thursday morning. If you can't be honest with me now, then when?"
Stephen felt the fear in his belly like cold water, but he wasn't going to let that stop him. He was going to push forward and tell her something he'd never told anyone before in his entire life. And yet, every second of every moment, he had felt it. "Tessa, this is going to sound stupid, but I feel like I'm going to do something great. It's just a feeling. I mean, I have no evidence to support it. I grew up in Thornton, I got B's in school, and I knew I wasn't going to go to any big university. Hell, I'm lucky to be going to Metro. But at some point, something is going to happen, and it's going to make my entire life make sense." He watched as the smile dimmed on her face. Her eyes went far away, and a hush filled the coffee shop. A car outside honked a horn, and another car roared past on the street. What was that look about? Why wasn't she saying anything? Stephen had no idea. There was no way he could ask. He got the mop wet, swirled it into the wringer, drove the handle hard to wring it out, and then started on the floor behind the coffee bar. He'd been so stupid to open up like that. She must think he was such a moron. He concentrated on wiping away the coffee grime and footprints from the day. In a few short hours, he'd be 20 years old officially. According to his mom, he'd been born at exactly 6:16 a.m. But then sometimes his mom said she'd brought him home at 6:16 a.m. His mom was a bit spacey, even on her best days, so he had no idea what time he'd been born. And it was odd how she talked about it. Spacey and odd, that was his mother. Why wasn't Tessa saying anything? Finally, he had to break the silence. "You know, today is my birthday, and maybe the big grand something that is going to happen will happen because of my superior mopping skills."
"You do mop well," Tessa finally said.
He risked glancing at her face. Instead of a smirk or sneer or any kind of disgust, he saw tears sparkling in her eyes. Damn, her silence was one thing, but tears were a whole other animal, a species he had no idea how to handle. It was time to try and back out of the trouble he'd got himself into. "Well, Tessa, you know, I bet most people think that they're special. Isn't that the point of humanitarianism? We're all special humans living special lives when in fact we're just ants."
Tessa jumped off the counter, landing her trendy knee-high boots squarely onto the area he'd just mopped.
Don't, she said viciously, don't do that.
She grabbed his arm. He found himself staring into her face. Don't mop? You know, Mr. Slocum pays the Broadway Cleaners Incorporated like $500 a week to keep his coffee shop. Not to brag, but I get like 5% of that. A night. Cha-ching!
Tessa didn't smile, and those tears never left her eyes. Don't do that either, she said. Don't shit on your truth by avoiding it or by trying to be funny.
Trying and failing, Stephen murmured, obviously. Tessa must have realized she had lost control of herself because she let go of his arm and stepped back.
Maybe we're all ants, maybe nothing matters, but Stephen, you work your ass off. You'll get home around 2, but you have your cafeteria job at 9. You do that, then ace your classes before you go to the library.
It was a shock that she knew his schedule as well as she did. Stephen, wisely, stayed quiet. She kept on talking, passion in her voice.
You're at least trying to make something of yourself. Me? I have this crappy job and I write my crappy poetry and practice my crappy calligraphy, and that's my life. That's probably going to be my life for the duration. And yet...
She crossed her arms over her chest.
I felt it too. On some nights when I'm alone in my room, I know that someday I'm going to rise above all this. For me, though, it's wishful thinking. For you...
Stephen couldn't stare into her eyes. They were too intense, too pretty. He slopped the mop back into the bucket.
You're doing stuff to make your dreams come true, Tessa finished. Unlike me.
Give me a break, Tessa. You go out, you have boyfriends and girlfriends, and you go dancing, and you take care of your brother, and you do stuff too. Yeah, I'm going to college, but you could too. I could help.
Tessa flung out a hand. It's all so empty. All that sex and the newness wears off, and I'm with some hipster and his beard, and there's nothing there. Yes, I have friends, and I love my family, especially my brother, but if some great thing is going to happen to us, we're going to have to work for it. You're doing that. She paused. I'm not.
For a second, Stephen thought about trying to argue against everything she just said. He thought about telling her he'd been in love with her for months. But then he knew the friend zone well. And with someone like Tessa, it wasn't just a zone, it was a dungeon, and she'd thrown him into the friend dungeon long ago and thrown away the key. No way would she ever go for him.
Yet, she knew his schedule. She admired him for some strange reason, even though he let Bud walk all over him. Could he escape the dungeon and into her heart?
He was about to say something when a guy in a lizard mask, covering his entire head, charged through the front door. In his hand was a black pistol. Fuck. Bud hadn't locked the front door on his way out.
Take the cash, Tessa yelped in fear.
No, this guy hadn't just busted in to rob the place. Something about him, something about the way he moved, how he held the gun, and how his weird red eyes fixed on Stephen said that he hadn't come for the money. He raised the gun. He didn't aim for Stephen, though. He fired at Tessa.
Chapter 2 Stephen didn't even pause to consider what to do. It was like every single movie he'd ever watched had taught him exactly what to do at that moment. He flung his arms up and lunged in front of the bullet. He felt the punch of lead striking his chest and knocking him back. He wasn't dead yet. Good. He didn't feel like he was bleeding. But he must have been.
Tessa, get to the back room and call the police.
Stephen whirled, grabbed his mop, and leapt over the counter. The guy in the lizard mask fired again. Stephen dodged to the side on instinct. His heart hammered and adrenaline gushed into his system, making it hard to think even as his senses came alive in a way he'd never known before. He could smell the guy's leather coat, the cleaner on the floor, the gunmetal oil, even the exhaust of cars outside. Every detail screamed at him. Another bullet hit him, this time in the arm, and it hurt, but that pain felt distant. He had to keep Tessa safe, and he had to get that gun away from the psycho. Why wear a mask that covered your entire head? It was green, scaly, and so realistic-looking.
He must have been a makeup artist, since the mask melded seamlessly with the guy's face. His eyes were crimson and slitted horizontally like a serpent's. He must have bought cosplay contact lenses at a Comic-Con to alter his eyes like that. "There's a guy with a gun," Tessa's panicked voice screamed from the back room. "He shot my friend. Please get here quick." That would be the 911 call. Steven slammed the mop into the lizard mask. The gunman was driven back into a table. The stacked chairs came tumbling down in a crash of noise. Steven lowered his shoulder and drove it into the guy. He tripped back over the chair and went down. The pistol went sliding across the floor. Dropping the mop, Steven bolted for the gun. The guy grabbed him and pulled him down. The masked man was strong and outweighed Steven by a lot. In fact, he was huge. The guy scrambled over Steven, digging a knee into one of his kidneys. The sharp pain made him gasp. That didn't seem right. How could a blow to the lower back hurt worse than a bullet wound? And where was the blood? Steven still didn't feel the blood. But he had other things to worry about. Both he and the gunman were on the floor reaching for the pistol. "Why are you still human?" the gunman hissed into Steven's ear. "Why haven't you changed to fight me?" Steven had no idea what that meant. He was human. The gunman was clearly insane. Too much time in front of the makeup mirror and too many Comic-Cons. Steven threw his head back and connected with the guy's face with a meaty crunch. The gunman grunted in pain, but he lunged forward and snatched up the pistol, rolling up onto his feet. Steven recovered the mop and stood. The guy lifted the gun to shoot him a third time, but Steven swung the mop and knocked the pistol back to the floor. Instead of going for the weapon, he gave the masked man another bite of wet nastiness. Sirens screamed, lights flashed, a cop car skidded onto the sidewalk. Two cops stormed out of their cruiser. Pistols filled their fists. The masked man's scarlet snake eyes glanced to the doors and then at Steven. Steven sucked in oxygen, readying himself for another round, and while he might have felt ridiculous going up against an armed man with a mop, it was better than nothing. And help was 20 feet away and armed with 9mm.
"Enjoy your little victory. It's gonna be your last. Next time, nothing will save you. We fucking underestimated you. It won't happen again."
The guy wheeled and took off through the coffee shop, past the bar, past the cleaning closet, into the back room, and out the rear door. The cops burst in the front. Steven yelled, "He's going out the back way!" The cops dashed past him. Steven felt at his chest and his arm. Both throbbed with pain. He wasn't bleeding, and he couldn't find the bullet wounds. What the hell? Steven had to see the wounds. He peeled off his shirt and looked at the skin above his heart. It was red, and yeah, it was going to bruise up like storm clouds, but there wasn't a hole there. His left arm was the same, red and aching, but unpierced. Tessa crept into the main room.
"Steven, holy shit, are you okay?"
He turned. Embarrassed, he bent and picked up his shirt. There on the floor was a crushed bit of lead, the bullet that should have destroyed his heart. Steven quickly pulled his shirt on. "Yeah, I thought he shot me. I mean, he was shooting at you, but then I got in the way. Not that I want you to thank me or anything. I wasn't a hero." He bent back down and retrieved the bullet and put it in his pocket. Tessa crossed to him and hugged him close.
"You were a total hero. You fought him off with a mop."
Her soft curves pressed up against him, the smell of her perfume, lavender dancing with cedar wood, and her body filled his senses. He wasn't just smelling her. It felt like he was tasting her as well. She felt so good in his arms. She smelled perfect, and he wanted to pull her tighter to him and run his hands through her hair and down her body, feeling her skin on his. His jeans grew uncomfortably tight. After the adrenaline of being shot and fighting off an attacker, he found himself incredibly turned on.
"I told you I have superior mop skills," he whispered.
The two cops came back in, looking perplexed. One was Hispanic with a big mustache, while the other was African-American. Another police cruiser pulled up. The Hispanic officer walked to the door, talking into the radio on his chest. The African-American had a smartphone out, and he walked over to Steven and Tessa. His last name, Potter, was on his badge.
"You two okay? Do I need to call an ambulance?"
Stephen wanted to ask Potter what it felt like to get shot, and if bullets ever didn't work.
I'm okay, Tessa said. Stephen?
He blinked, trying to figure out what was going on. Yeah, I'm okay. He must have missed me. I mean, if he would have shot me, I'd be bleeding and all messed up. But I'm not. Potter's brows furrowed. We chased him into the back alley, but then he was just... gone. He couldn't have climbed up the walls, and we would have seen him running. It was like he simply flew away. The stink back there was nasty. You guys keep rotting meat in the dumpster? No, just coffee shop trash. Lots of grounds, Stephen said. Tessa moved from them.
I need coffee to calm my nerves. You guys want some?
Yeah, I'll take some, Potter said. You? Stephen shook his head. He didn't feel like eating or drinking anything, and he had to get up early for his cafeteria shift in a few hours. It was all so surreal. And it was Bud's fault. That dickhead should have locked the door behind him. Then the masked guy wouldn't have been able to just burst in like he did. Stephen went and replaced the chairs on the table. He saw the gun. Officer Potter, I managed to knock his gun out of his hands. Maybe you can use that to figure out who he is. Potter snapped on plastic gloves and got out a plastic bag.
Yeah, we can run it for prints and see if it's registered. I'd be surprised if it is, though. Most likely I'm thinking this is a run-of-the-mill armed robbery. How much is in the register?
Tessa answered. There was a little under $2,000, but we already cleared it and put it in the safe. I don't have the combination.
Stephen mopped up the scuffles from his fight, which was kind of stupid, but it felt good to be doing something normal after such a fucked up few minutes.
What about your boyfriend? Potter asked.
Stephen turned. He's not my boyfriend, Tessa said, but he doesn't have it either.
Ouch. Stephen winced. Even though he had saved her life, he was clearly still in the friend dungeon, locked away. The coffee machines chugged to life. Steam and screams of scorching milk filled the air. Stephen found the other bullet that had hit him. He slipped it into his pocket as well. Potter got their names, checked their IDs, and took full statements. The other police officer scoured the neighborhood, but the masked man had gotten away. No matter what they said, this hadn't been a typical robbery. The gunman had come in firing, and from what he had said, he'd come again. But was he aiming for Tessa or for him? Stephen had no idea. It was a little after 3 a.m. when he and Tessa finally got the coffee clutch closed down. He unlocked his crappy thrift store bike, then turned to her.
You don't have any enemies, do you?
Enemies? Tessa shrugged. There was this one psycho girl I had to dump because she was ultra insane. But no, I'm pretty chill. How about you? When he came in, I thought for sure he was going to shoot you first. He was staring right at you.
Stephen nodded. I thought so, too. Maybe he thought he'd take you out first as a witness, and then he'd get to me. I don't know.
Me neither, Tessa said. Stephen frowned.
He's probably just crazy. While we were fighting, he talked about me staying in my human form. And that mask. He'll probably get back on his meds, find someone else to bother, or get locked up.
I hope so, Stephen. She stepped up and gave him another wonderful hug. But thank you for saving my life.
She went to move away, but Stephen stopped her.
Let me, he faltered. I can walk you home. It's late. There might be...
She grinned at him.
No, it's okay. You have farther to go, and you have to get up in a few hours. I only live a few doors down. I'll be okay.
She walked off down the empty sidewalk, and Stephen watched her go. Well, that was a complete rejection, if there ever was one. Still, he could go after her, tell her how he really felt. As if that would help. Nope. He was going to be spending another night alone.
Arya Kot transformed back into her human form. She crouched on the rooftop of the bar across from the coffee shop where Stephen Whip and Tessa Ross were talking. Their faces were painted by the neon lights. Cars flashed down the main avenue even though it was late. Arya caught the odor of Tessa's perfume, Stephen's aftershave, and the remnants of their adrenaline. She could also smell their arousal. But Tessa was walking away, and Stephen was watching her with mournful eyes. Was this really the presence she'd sensed? And she hadn't been the only one. The Prime had sensed it as well, and had sent one of his vassals to take care of what could only become a problem for the power-hungry overlord. The vassal had failed. The boy still lived. Something about this Stephen Whip was different. He reverberated with a power Arya had not felt before. Could this boy help her? Could he solve all her problems? There was only one way to find out. She had to talk to him, test him, and see if he truly was as powerful as he seemed. It was the only way. At least in her present state, he would be easy prey for her. Chapter 3 Stephen pedaled his bike down Broadway and felt the back tire get squishy. He'd tried to patch the tire, but the slow leak told him he'd done a crappy job. He'd have to replace the tube, which shouldn't have been a big deal, but it would mean skipping a meal to afford it. He turned onto a street, big houses, huge trees, an old neighborhood to be sure. Ancient cottonwoods sprouted from the cracked cement of sidewalks, buds weighed down the branches, waiting for spring to get warmer before they burst open with new leaves. He found the biggest tree on the block, and that was his home. He biked up to the rambling two-story house where he rented a room on the ground floor, right side. A bizarre bunch of people lived in the dilapidated home. College students, old people, and half-homeless drug addicts on their way toward rock bottom. At nearly 4 a.m., lights were still on in half the rooms, and the thump of music came from the basement, where the party was just beginning. The old people, on the other hand, were just waking up to watch the news. Stephen chained his bike up to the neighbor's fence. He inhaled the early morning air and wondered if getting 3 hours of sleep was worth it, or if he should just power through the day with energy drinks. A question for the ages. The smell of cinnamon filled the air, unmissable, warm and sweet. Odd. Were old man Yank and his wife making cinnamon rolls? Footsteps ground on the gravel in the crack of an alley between houses. A slender figure emerged, tall and graceful. It was Arya Kot, the gorgeous exchange student from his school who also studied in the coffee clutch every now and then. She was wearing a black velvet dress, stockings and heels. She had a glittering purple scarf capturing her lush hair. Even in the dim glow of the streetlights, her eyes were emerald green and gorgeous. She approached, and her perfume hit him, part exotic scent and part cinnamon. The amazing woman walked right up to him and took his hand.
"Do you know who you are, Stephen?" she asked. "Do you know what you are?"
Even at the best of times, Stephen had trouble talking to beautiful women. Now, here Arya was asking him the weirdest questions, and his brain was already mush after a long night of violence and Tessa's complete rejection. Stephen blinked. Her hand was warm and soft in his, and her smell, sweet and sultry all at the same time, frazzled his brain.
Yeah, I'm Stephen Whip. As to what I am,
he shrugged.
College student, poor bastard, and really sleepy.
Arya frowned at him.
You don't know. How can that be?
She leaned in closer.
What if I told you that you had almost infinite power in you?
Arya, what's going on? Stephen asked.
He'd talked with her before, both in classes and at the coffee shop, and she had seemed normal. He didn't think she was crazy. But what was her deal?
The vassal, he attacked you tonight at the coffee clutch, right? How did you survive?
She asked, eyes squinted. Stephen found himself looking at her lips while she talked. They were full, red, and kissable. He had to get a hold of himself. Weird shit was going down.
How do you know about that? Are you spying on me? And what's a vassal?
Arya's frown deepened. Those burning green eyes turned sad, then desperate.
I need help, but you might not be able to help me. You don't know who you are. That, or you don't remember. But there is something. Here.
She pressed her hand against his chest, and the pendant he always wore grew hot on his skin. It was a little chunk of topaz hanging on a simple steel necklace. Mystic topaz, or that's what his mother said. It was one of those things he'd always had, in a cigar box, buried in a junk drawer, or hanging on his bed along with a badge from his most recent Comic-Con and the one tie he had for special occasions. He'd started wearing the topaz pendant regularly after high school. He had no idea where he'd first gotten it. His mother's memory was terrible about such things, and his father had left town for good after Stephen turned 16. If you're a gambler, and if you hit a losing streak, it's safer to become a moving target. Arya drew the necklace out of his clothes and touched the pendant. It seemed to glow. No, couldn't be, just a trick of the light.
Where did you get this?
Arya asked. Stephen moved back from the strange woman. Yes, she was amazingly beautiful, but she was also asking him odd questions he simply couldn't answer. She turned on him and folded her arms across her chest, her hands on her shoulders. She wasn't pissed off. She was holding on to herself, so sad and so desperate.
You don't know. You don't know anything. Yes, I was spying on you because I thought you were someone, something else. Now I understand you are a mystery even to yourself.
Tears spilled down her cheeks.
My fate is sealed. I'm lost. My masquerade as an American college student failed, and now my life will be as long and as loveless as my mother's back in Mumbai.
Anger flashed through Stephen. He walked right up to her. Arya, I have no idea what's going on, but I want to help. We could call the police, or there's the counseling office at Metro State. But first, tell me what's going on and why you think I'm involved. One good thing about the strange encounter with Arya, it made it clear he wasn't sleeping that night, which was why God invented Red Bulls. He'd be okay. He'd done sleepless nights before. Plenty of them. Arya gazed into his face. That intense look was back in her eyes.
I don't know where to start, Stephen. So I will start with a kiss. To test you. But I must warn you, this kiss might destroy us both. This one kiss might change everything forever. If I am lucky. If you are damned.
Stephen couldn't believe this was happening to him. A kiss from a beautiful woman? Yeah, that would change his life at least for a few weeks during his alone time with Mr. Fappy and his five-finger dance-off. But that wasn't what she was talking about. And deep down, he knew it. She stepped forward and took his hands in hers.
For whatever reason, you don't know what you are. You could live a normal life, you could be a normal person and avoid the battle and heartache that is the fate of our kind. So I will give you a choice. You can go into your home and forget this ever happened, or you can kiss me and embrace your destiny.
Stephen grinned. Arya, I've been a seemingly normal guy all my life. Kissing you, destiny or not, would be my pleasure, and damn the consequences. He drew her to him. A bold move, probably the boldest of his life. He was normal, but he'd never felt normal. This was his chance to take a step in an entirely different direction. Yes, this woman was probably completely insane, but maybe she wasn't. After all, Stephen had been shot twice and had the bullets in his pockets. Maybe he was more than just a college student in Denver. Arya inhaled sharply. Stephen found his next breaths hard to take. His heart pounded, and his thoughts grew muddy. Their faces were so close. He could smell her skin and her breath, cinnamon and musky and deep and dark as chocolate. She closed her eyes. He studied her face and then leaned in. His lips brushed hers, and the sparks inside of him went off like fireworks. He felt electrified, breathless, insane. This was crazy. This kiss was crazy. He couldn't help but close his eyes at the power of it. She grabbed his head and pushed his mouth harder onto hers. He tasted her mouth, feeling her wet lips and then her tongue. Bright. Something bright enveloped them, and he wanted to look, but her body felt so good pressed up against him. He realized she was trembling, quaking, out of fear or lust or both. She was gasping, and so was he. The light was getting brighter and brighter, and his skin grew warmer and warmer. There seemed to be a fire inside of him, not in his stomach, but filling his core with raw life. That wonderful heat and the pure pleasure of kissing this stunning, mysterious woman did seem like risking damnation. She pressed herself harder against him, and while she had one hand on his head, the other went to his ass, and he found Arya straddling his leg while they kissed. She was rubbing herself on his thigh, and he'd never been harder in his life. This was his first real kiss. The dare in the eighth grade with Kristen Pierce didn't count, nor did the spin-the-bottle game with Maggie Maxwell or the two-week dating he'd tolerated with Taylor Houlihan, a gamer girl he'd met online. No, those kisses had meant nothing, had been nothing. This was a kiss that changed lives. She was gasping into his mouth, their bodies were entwined, but Stephen knew they both wanted more, to fully join. That bright light and heat, both inside him and without, was getting more and more intense. Sweat covered him. Every breath became painful, as did every heartbeat. It was like his chest was full of boiling gold. Too much, too hot, too painful, and yet in that pain was such a wanton joy. It felt like a star about to go supernova, and it felt like a carnival of cotton candy. He wanted to pull back from the kiss even as he wanted to dive deeper into it, rip off her clothes and take her on the ground under the cottonwood tree above. The heat burned more, the light grew brighter, and the pain grew stronger until he felt himself consumed by them. He was falling. He was going to topple and bash his skull on the sidewalk. Didn't happen. Arya grew in his arms. They weren't kissing anymore, but whatever she had started wasn't about to stop. He opened his eyes. All he could see was light exploding out of him. Before he knew it, he was blind, cradled in her arms, and then the sun inside of him exploded. He wanted to escape the pain. He never wanted to leave Arya's arms, not ever. He screamed. His consciousness was plucked away by forces far more powerful than he could ever hope to be. He woke at some point later, and he knew time had passed, but he wasn't sure how much. He was in his bed with his fist around the pendant, clutching it tight. His clothes were on, but his shoes were off. He turned and saw Arya sitting in his desk chair by his bookcase and the reading lamp near it. She was intently poring over a book, but he had no idea which one. He was hit with the desire to get up and at least grab his dirty clothes off the floor and throw them in the laundry basket. He winced. There was a pair of his underwear lying right on top of his jeans, and books, papers, mail, all were jumbled around his small room, which was basically a bed, a desk, a window, a bookcase, a lamp, and a bathroom not much bigger than a closet. Stephen wanted to rouse himself, get up and ask Arya a bunch of questions, but he'd never been more tired in his entire life. The kiss had worn him out, but it had also awakened something inside of him. The pendant warmed his fist as the glowing started again. Then the pain, damn it, the pain. It felt like being burned from the inside out. He twisted in the bed, kicked off the sheets, and flung out his hands. He was going to die, he knew it. This was what dying felt like. "You poisoned me," he grunted. "Damn it, that kiss poisoned me, and now you're going to watch me die." Arya came over, held his hand, and wiped sweat from his face with a damp cloth she'd grabbed from somewhere.
"You haven't had animus before, Stephen. It's changing you. It's opening doors that you had no idea existed inside you."
Another wave of burning swept through his body, and the light, that light, where was it coming from? Then he knew in a flash of insight. The pendant. But why would the pendant be trying to kill him?
"I warned you," Arya said softly. "I warned you that the kiss could destroy us both."
She had. He didn't know what animus was, but he did know that their kiss was killing him. Thankfully, his mind snapped shut, fleeing the torture and the concern on Arya's face. Before he lost consciousness again, he saw Arya's eyes had changed. They were greener. But that wasn't what was odd. Her pupils had become long horizontal slits, like the eyes of a deadly snake about to strike. Chapter 4. Edgar Vale walked to the windows of the secret penthouse suite and gazed out at the lights of Denver. Being up so high soothed him because he was a bird of prey. He had failed in the hunt that night, but he wouldn't rest until this Stephen asshole was dead. Tumbler in hand, he drank from the smooth single malt scotch and enjoyed the bite. It was a Macallan, $2,000 a bottle, one of his prime's cheaper liquors. He scratched at his long beard and then felt the stubble on his scalp with hands covered in tattoos. A lot of them were from high school, but some were from prison. He'd done time, a lot of it, and he swore he'd never be caged again. The door to one of the bedrooms, there were six, opened, and Mouse crept out. She was a slight, petite woman with platinum blonde hair and large blue eyes. Her black nightgown made her skin appear like flawless porcelain. That pile of platinum atop her head was must from sleep, and those blue eyes were squinted even in the orange glow of the mood lighting in the suite.
"Eddie, you need to sleep. You're not a full skin yet."
He hated that he was still a skinling. He hated that he had failed to kill the little shit. He'd even failed to take out that goth bitch. He'd thought he'd drill her first and then take out the little prick as the main event. He hated that Mouse was beautiful and smelled so good and she was off limits to him, and always would be, most likely. He hurled the tumbler to the floor and it shattered. "I know, Mouse. I know what I am, and I know that I'm nothing special. I'm weak."
"You didn't kill him, did you?" Mouse asked quietly.
Yes, she seemed so shy and innocent, but Edgar knew what she could do, what she could be, when she transformed. She was a full soul, an escort to their prime and beyond reach. "I shot him twice, once in the heart, and yeah, he didn't die. Goddamn bullets bounced off him. And then he hit me with a mop," Edgar growled. Mouse raised a hand to cover her smile.
"A mop?"
"And then the cops came," Edgar said. "I ran. The Prime hates dealing with the fucking human bureaucracy, though he's paid everyone off."
"He does hate dealing with the humans," Mouse agreed with a nod. "But he hates failure just as much. He will not be pleased. He will hurt us. He might kill you. You are just a skinling, after all."
Edgar whirled on her. He charged across the room and grabbed her wrist. "You love throwing that in my face, don't you? You laugh at me, I know, but I don't care. When I become a full skin, I'm going to ask the Prime for you. It's been done before. If I serve him well..." Mouse's arm grew scales and grew hot. The smell of her transformation hit him like a fist, a sharp almond smell, like if you threw almond extract onto hot coals. Edgar felt his palms sizzle. He gripped her harder, enjoying the burn and her odor. "Yeah, Mouse, I know what you are, and someday you won't be able to hurt me. Someday, you'll be mine." She smiled.
"Why not take me now?"
Edgar shoved her away. He slammed his burned hand into an ice bucket sitting on the bar. "You know why. He put you here as a test. He's testing you like he's testing me. Because he doesn't trust you. Otherwise, you'd be with him in the Cheyenne Airy right now with the rest of his escort." That maddening smile widened on her face. Her eyes had become serpentine, blue sapphires slitted up the center.
"If he's testing us, well, that's easy for me. I wouldn't fuck you even if you were a full soul. You, however, you failed once. Our Prime comes back in 3 days to take on a new escort. You had better have finished the job before then, or else he'll take it out on both of us. You because you failed him. Me because he can."
"How can this little son of a bitch be bulletproof already?" Edgar asked. "He's not an adult dragon soul yet, and damn it, I don't even think he has access to his animus. My gun should have put him down."
"He's special. I can feel it. The Prime is too arrogant to take him seriously, which is why he's assigned you the task of killing him."
Mouse walked across the shattered glass to the window. The shards crunched under her feet without hurting them because of the tremendous power she'd been born with. If only Edgar had been so lucky. He wouldn't have to go through the rituals, which were painful, but almost over. Soon, so soon, he would graduate from skinling to full dragon skin, and the leap in power would be amazing. He hadn't been born special, just some kid with a drunk mother and an ex-con father who had lived hard on the streets. He'd been born to die. Since God hadn't done shit for him, Edgar would do it. He'd make himself special or die trying.
So, no bullets, Edgar growled. But we have the blades. I know some men, bad men, who can help me. Next time we'll take magic swords and chop them into fish bait and throw the pieces in Sloane's lake. We'll let the goddamn carp clean up our mess for us.
Standing by the window, Mouse stretched. The lights of Denver shined on her skin and the silky fabric of her nightie. Her nipples were hard. Her hips looked so good. Edgar felt himself stiffen. He licked his lips.
Yes, in the next 3 days, I will kill this dragonling, even if I have to become a skin a little early. The ritual might kill me, but then, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
And you will need your strength, Mouse whispered.
She drew the strings of her nightgown over her shoulders and let them drop. Standing there naked, she looked like sex personified.
To kill the boy, and to resist me.
Edgar swallowed hard.
And you just love teasing me.
She walked past him and pushed her nightgown into his face. It smelled like her, and it drove him insane.
I loathe my existence, skinling, she said. But I do love teasing you because in the end you'll never have me. I'd rather join this Stevens escort than ever sleep with you.
She moved past, and he watched her ass jiggle so enticingly.
Fuck this new dragon, Edgar spat. He'll never have an escort, and I'm not going to let him acquire a horde or build even a single airy. This fucker is dead. Dead, you hear me?
He'd better be.
Mouse paused at the door and turned her head so Edgar could see both her ass and her face.
Or in 3 days, you'll be the dead fucker who never had the chance to fuck me.
She laughed and disappeared into the luxury of the master bedroom, the suite within the suite. God damn her. Edgar hated her as much as he wanted her. Stephen felt himself float off the bed, but then he was dreaming. It all had to be a dream because he stood in front of a huge dragon the size of a house. The thing was classic dragon, all right, with long wings sweeping from a muscled back armored with dark crimson scales. The serpentine face and long jaw sported teeth like spears. A silver-streaked black beard sprouted off the chin of the beast, and a long tail curled around the dragon. Both its feet and its strong, powerful arms were tipped with massive claws. Stephen stood in the middle of grasslands just as dawn broke over the horizon, the sweet smell of dew on grasses mixed with the scent of sagebrush. It was like he was on the Great Plains east of Denver, but in reality, he knew he was in his bedroom. The yellow eyes of the beast opened, and the horizontal slits pulsed, capturing the light of the morning sun. The dragon spoke.
Stefan Dracaris, Dragonling, you will learn to know that name and you will celebrate it. You were saved. All others were murdered, but you were saved. For 2 decades you have remained hidden from the world. But lo, on this day, the day of your birth, you have tasted your first animus.
Animus. At the word, the ground broke open under his feet, and another dragon rose from the dirt, wings flapping away the dust and gases. This dragon had dark blue scales and darker colored wings. It was bigger, and the blue beard on its chin waggled down its glittering chest. It opened its great fanged mouth, and lightning shot from its maw and struck the red dragon, blasting off scales and charring the flesh underneath. Both the red and the blue creature took to the air. The red dragon opened its mouth and covered the blue dragon in flames, even as the blue sent electricity to sizzle into the wing of the red. The dragons crashed together, claws rending flesh, wings beating like hurricanes, tails lashing. The beasts smashed back to the ground, sending up clouds of debris that swept over Stephen. The two weren't done fighting, though. As the dust of their impact cleared, two human-shaped figures emerged. One wore crimson plate mail edged in black. The visor on his helmet was drawn back to reveal a face, half-dragon, half-human. Crimson scales covered his face and neck. The other half-dragon, half-man hybrid was blue. Blue scales, blue hair, and blue armor. Both gripped two-handed swords and rushed the other. Sparks flew as the blades met, flashing in the morning sun, until the red dragon knight cut the head off the blue. Blood geysered out of the severed neck, and then, from the wound, flashed a brilliant blue light. The red knight reached out a mailed hand, and the blue radiance poured into his palm, swirling up his arm. The red knight turned to the stunned Stephen and spoke through a fanged, serpentine mouth.
"Animus gives us power. We gain animus from the souls of our enemies and from the love of our escort."
The dragon knight then shifted into being purely human, an older man, middle-aged with a white-streaked beard and salt-and-pepper hair. The armor fell away, and the guy was in jeans and a white linen shirt. Blood dripped down from a cut on his forehead, a wound he'd gotten from his battle with the blue dragon. From behind Stephen, because, yeah, dream logic, a gorgeous older woman slipped up to hold the dragon knight now standing there as a man. She was in a flowing white dress, and she had a shock of bright white hair bursting over her forehead in her otherwise jet-black hair. The two kissed, and light flashed. More animus flowed into the man. The woman stepped back and smiled at Stephen, a warm, loving smile. His mother had given him similar gazes over the course of his life. He seemed to know these people, but how? The man raised a hand and made a complicated gesture with his fingers. He spoke a word that contained soft vowels and hard consonants. Magically, the wound on his forehead closed, skin knitting together in a flash. He'd just cast a spell to heal himself, using the animus from his battle and the kiss. The man caught Stephen's gaze.
"Yes, you are a dragon soul, Stephen. All of this is within your reach. As you grow in power, you can use the animus to transform into your true form, into your partial form, and from there you can add to your armor, or you can grow your strength, or you can increase your exhalance. You can gain the ability to breathe fire, lightning, ice, acid, poisonous gas, or dark energy. And spells, Stephen. You can cast spells to harness the power of the universe. In the Drokaris Grimoire, you will find all the answers. But you must first find it, write it, and then you will know your true destiny. The magic of three, Stephen. Remember the magic of three."
Stephen had played MMOs and D&D his whole life, and couldn't help but think the man was describing a gaming system. The animus was like experience points, and he could use it to level up, improve his abilities, and unlock new skills. That meant fighting, killing, or sex with women. Actual women. If he chose to go down this path, his life would be war and sex. Yeah, that second part would be great, but the first part? The man took the hand of his wife, his escort. That was the word he'd used. He went on.
"You were hidden, Stephen, but you can't hide anymore, and while it pains me to say it, you are not prepared to face the forces coming to kill you. Gain animus, perfect your skills, gather your escort, acquire your hoard, and build your Ares. Play the game of the primes for now until you can bring revolution."
Stephen gasped and woke. He really was levitating over his bed. He let out a yelp and went tumbling onto his mattress. He'd been high enough to bounce off his bed and onto the floor, right in the middle of his dirty laundry. The pendant glowed, getting brighter, and he felt the now familiar heat filling his chest, from his neck to his groin. The burn hurt, but he was getting used to the pain. Arya was nowhere to be seen. The curtains were closed, but from the edges he knew it was well past dawn, probably around 8:30, which meant even if he hurried, he'd be late for his cafeteria job doing dishes, wiping tables, and cleaning up after the breakfast rush. The glow increased. The pendant sent a holographic map of Colorado in perfect 3D shining in the air in front of Stephen's eyes. Denver glowed brightly, all the streets, highways, and buildings. To the south was Colorado Springs, to the north, Fort Collins. Three bright flames flashed, one on the Great Plains, north of Denver and east of I-25 along the St. Vrain River. Another bundle of fire flashed on Lookout Mountain, near the edge of the western suburbs. Finally, right in the heart of downtown Colorado Springs, the last starburst of flame flickered.
"The magic of three,"
Stephen whispered, though he had no idea what that meant. He did know one thing. He had to get to work and start his day. He'd gotten a good, 2 hours and 57 minutes of sleep. That would have to do. The pendant's light winked out. Bulletproof or not, dragon soul or not, he had to tackle his day and try and get some normalcy back into the madness his life had become.
Chapter 5.
His boss at the cafeteria was pissed that he was late, but Stephen was having a hard time taking anything seriously. Part of it was his brain, dipped in caffeine, pounded by lack of sleep, bored as he hosed oatmeal off bowls and old eggs off plates. At the dishes station, he blazed through dishes and then hustled out to wipe off tables. What was he doing working this dumbass job when he could be out searching for the three flames? He didn't know. Had he lost his mind? It felt like it. Stephen tried to make sense of the last 12 hours. He couldn't be this Dragon Soul thing. That whole thing had been a dream, and yet it did explain why the bullets bounced off him, Arya's strange behavior, the magic of their kiss, and the glowing pendant. He'd told Tessa that he thought he was special. He hadn't meant dragon special. At best, Stephen figured he'd get rich running a successful business, get married, and have amazing children. He'd use his wealth and connections to help his family and other people live great lives. Where did shapeshifting come into play? And escorts, hordes, Ares? Manuel Rodriguez, a work friend, was in the office fixing a computer. Stephen had to talk to someone about what was going on. Manuel was a good guy. Stephen leaned in conspiratorially, arms crossed. "Hey, Manuel, what if you were bulletproof? I mean, what if you knew for a fact no one could shoot you? Would you keep going to work?" Manuel screwed up his face.
How would you know for certain? That would be really hard to test. Like learning to fly. If someone told me I could fly, how could I prove it?"
What he said made a lot of sense. "Yeah, I guess, but what if someone shot you and the bullet bounced off? So you have proof." Manuel thought for a minute, one hand on the mouse, other hand on the keyboard.
"Okay, so I'm bulletproof, like Luke Cage. I guess I'd fight crime, but that really doesn't pay the bills, and I wouldn't want to be a freak show. Sooner or later, the government would come to study me."
He paused and seesawed his head.
"Maybe become a mercenary? You could go into any sort of bad situation without getting hurt."
"So I should quit my job, quit school, and go to Iraq?" Stephen asked. His friend laughed.
"That doesn't sound like much fun. I don't know, man."
"What if you could change shape by killing people or having sex?"
"Essay, you're being super weird," Manuel replied, rolling his eyes. "Seriously, you might be watching too many comic book movies. But if I was an incubus, which is a male succubus, I'd find some lovely lady, work my magic, and get my sex on. Then totally I'd find someone to pay me to fight crime, make the world a better place. You know, with great power comes great responsibility."
Stephen nodded. "Thanks, man." He thought Manuel might remember it was his birthday, but he didn't, which was okay. Stephen was too busy to really have close friends anyway. Thinking about Manuel's answers to his weird questions didn't help him. Should he quit school and his jobs on such a risk? He wasn't sure yet. But he did know he had to finish up in the cafeteria, grab some lunch, and then get to his statistics class. He had another energy drink, but he was starving.
He got a burger, 2 hot dogs, and a big slice of pizza for lunch, but he still felt hungry. It was a feast he couldn't quite afford, but again, he wasn't thinking clearly. On his way to class, he called his mom. He got her voicemail, but didn't bother leaving a message. His mom couldn't figure out technology to save her life, and that included voicemail.